Back here on the Mighty 690, it is time for our Green Side Up program, brought to you by the folks at Green Acres. And we are joined now by Jesse Gilmore, horticulture agent for the Wildcat District. And also we have Francis Graves joining us as Community Vitality Extension Agent and District Director. So good to have you on.
Good morning.
Yeah, so we are going to start out here first with Jesse, and I know that we've got lots of stuff going on. People are starting to think about springtime and stuff, and I know we're going to go over some. First of all, anything from your perspective as far as upcoming events go?
Upcoming events. Well, I have one, and Francis might have had this on her list to mention, but tractor safety training is coming up on March 12th. If you have kids who need tractor safety training, that would be important to sign them up for. We go through the different things that you need to keep in mind in order to operate a tractor safely, because tractors can be pretty dangerous if they are handled incorrectly out in the field. You would just call one of our offices to get signed up for that, I believe. And March 12th in Altamont in Labette County is where we are having it.
Well, good deal. We'll be going over some more of those events and such coming up. But yeah, that's definitely going to be a good one. Mark your calendars. And those are typically during spring break. So that's a chance for, those kids to really get that extra time in, and it's a lot better than just sitting around the house or something.
Yep, for sure. And the kids last year seemed to be pretty interested in the topic, which I know from my city perspective, tractors aren't that interesting, but the kids were finding it really interesting, and so was I, as I was sitting there listening to Wendy, David, and James talk about all these different topics related to tractor safety.
We've got a lot of family farms around the area, and I know parents are eager to have their kids be able to help out a little bit, too. And a lot of times, with most kids, they're excited to be able to drive something. So.
Yeah, they want to help out
yes.
a lot of the time. They're eager to provide something.
Absolutely. So, hey, we did recently have, not too long ago, some of those Census of Agriculture results come in, and I know you wanted to talk about a little bit of that related to the horticulture perspective, because a lot of great data from that.
Yeah, so the Census of Agriculture, for people who aren't aware, is a census that is sent out to food producers. It doesn't necessarily need to be plants, it could be livestock owners as well, but every 5 years. So our last one before this most recent one was in 2017, and the data that was actually just released is from the census that was sent back in 2022. So there's a lot of lag because there's a lot of data that people need to go through and sort out into publications that they then release over a period of about a year. So we just got the preliminary data for states and counties across the country. And that will tell you basic information. As the time goes on, you'll get more targeted publications for specific topics that are of interest. For example, new and beginning farmers. How many more farmers are there now that have just started growing food than there were in 2017, or potentially a decline? But we actually saw increases in new and beginning farmers in all four of our counties, which is good to see. So that data is useful for farmers. It helps them determine, in the horticulture industry anyway, where there might be a niche for market crops that aren't really grown in our area, but could be. For example, blackberries. I was surprised to see that there's only one commercial blackberry farm in our district. That's not counting Brenda's Berries, which is in Cherokee County. So I did not quite look at Cherokee County, but definitely in Wildcat District, there is a lot of potential for blackberries as a marketable crop. And just berries across the board. There was only one commercial farm that grew strawberries, and that was in Wilson County. So you can look at this data and you can determine if there's something that you might want to try growing commercially that you think you might have a corner in the market for, because no one else is growing it.
Well, and that can lead into agritourism as well. People like going to pick berries and different fruits and stuff.
Yeah, so the U.S. Department of Agriculture actually does its own agritourism survey, but I don't think that's included in the census of agriculture. I think that is its own extra thing, and I think that's actually 2025 when they do that, but I would need to double check. But yeah, agritourism is one particularly untapped way of adding a little extra income to the farm. The thing you have to keep in mind about the census of agriculture is that unlike the population census that the government does every 10 years, you're not legally required, I don't believe, to answer the census of agriculture. It's not codified into law. So you do have to keep in mind that the data you're looking at, while probably useful, is usually not going to be the whole picture for our area. It's a good starting point, and it's good information to use, but you do have to take it with a grain of salt. Non-response has always been an issue with surveys in the past, and really, a census is just one big survey. So,
And how is the census actually conducted? Do they mail something out? Is it phone interviews? How does it work?
That's a great question. I can tell you what I think I remember, but it's been a while since I've done the research on it. Typically, they will mail out a code that is unique to your farm or food production organization that you then go online and you put the code in, and it will give you your census, essentially. And you just go through all of the questions. If they don't apply to you, you say they don't apply to you, and it skips that section pretty much. But then that code will tell the census staff, essentially, of which there are quite a lot because there is a lot of data, that you responded, and they aggregate all of that data to the county level. So while your information they have, it remains confidential, because if there's a, for example, if there's only one organization, one farm in a county that does blackberries, then they will not release any extra data. If there's two farms in a county that do one specific thing, for example, blackberries, they will not release the data. They will mark it with a D because they don't want identifiable information for other organizations being released. So if you're one of the blackberry farms and you know how much you made, then by subtracting what you made from the total, you would know how much the other place made. And so they don't want to release that kind of information. They want to keep it as confidential as possible. So aggregation is one way to obscure individual business information from the public, which is important for privacy. And so that's one way that they make sure that they keep your information as private as possible.
Now, does this include only larger farms, or could this also include like a family farm, hobby farms? Where did they draw the line?
So they drew the line where if you are making $1,000 a year, I believe, or more from food that you have grown and sold, then you would want to fill out the census of agriculture. So that could include quite a few farms that sell at farmers markets. I don't believe at this point it is value added. Things like processed foods, you know, breads or baked goods, jams or jellies or things like that. It's just growing the food right now. That could include herbs. Herbs was pretty well represented in our area, actually. I would like to meet the organizations that do grow herbs commercially. I'd love to know what they are growing, because herbs are an increasingly popular topic in our area. But yeah, if you are just a process or a value-added organization, you know, baked goods, then you would not qualify for the census of agriculture. But if you are selling $1,000 worth of produce a year at a farmer's market, you would qualify, because they want those small farms too, in order to accurately assess our food system and the scope of it in terms of specialty crops.
So what are some of the highlights from the results here from, you know, the 2022 numbers at least?
Well, I can tell you one of my favorite highlights. For the first time, they have included commercial pawpaw production on the census of agriculture. Yeah.
That's great.
Of course, I was going to bring up pawpaws.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, but it's interesting because that shows that there is more of a commercial interest in pawpaws now now than there was 5 years previously in the 2017 Census of Agriculture. We did not have any commercial pawpaw growers, which does not surprise me. They are very hard to market because of how fragile they are as fruits. That's why you're never going to see them in the grocery stores, because they do not travel well. They are hyper-local products. Probably best suited for a farmer's market, but that was interesting that they included it in the census in the first place. And we had about 10 or 11 counties in Kansas that had commercial growers of pawpaws, so that was pretty cool. One interesting thing that I saw was Labette County in particular has 819 acres worth of orchards, which sounds really high until you realize that orchards includes nuts.
Yeah.
And specifically pecans. All of Labette County's orchard acreage is in pecans. All of Wilson County's orchard acreage is in pecans. Montgomery County had one English walnut grower in addition to pecans, and about 30 acres or so in Crawford County out of the total were apples, but the rest were pecans. So as far as specialty crops go in our area, pecan is king. I would definitely recommend looking into fruit tree production because pears and plums in particular are very, very well adapted and usually pretty productive in our area. Pears, there were, I believe, three commercial producers, one in Montgomery and two in Wilson County, and no one grows plums commercially in the district, apparently, or at least no one responded to the census who grows plums. That I would probably attribute to kind of the confusion surrounding what type of plums to grow. There's three different types. There's American plums, there's European plums, which I think are the most thought of when we think of plums, but there's also Japanese plums, and they all have slightly different pollination and production expectations depending on what type and what cultivar you grow. So there's a lot of, I guess, experimentation that goes into plums that people aren't probably that comfortable with trying out. So that's probably why plums don't work. But as far as production goes, I've seen plums do well in our area. So as far as fruit trees goes, that would be one that I would recommend. One of the other interesting ones is that we have a commercial persimmon producer in Wilson County. Probably American persimmon, because Japanese persimmons do not... Well, actually, I've never seen anyone try and grow a Japanese persimmon in our area. They might do well, and they're definitely more marketable, I believe, because you're actually going to see Japanese persimmons in grocery stores, unlike American persimmons. But if it is American persimmon, I would love to meet them too, because persimmons are another one of those foraged plants that are gaining more popularity as market crops, farmers markets specifically. So it would be interesting to see more people try and grow persimmons commercially, but I do not know how successful they would be as a commercial crop. I know that they are very productive, but marketing is a whole different beast.
Gotcha. No, that is really interesting, and it's something that, you know, we really might not think about as far as we get so locked into, you know, wheat and corn and soybeans. You know, there's a lot more variety out there that is available if you think creatively.
Yep. Yeah, there's about 30 or 35 different vegetables that they dig down into in terms of production for acreage. Most small farms, it's going to feel weird filling out the Census of Agriculture because they ask you for, you know, acreage of beets. And most of the time, people are growing less than an acre of beets. I have not seen anyone grow an acre, really, of anything outside of pumpkins. Pumpkins, I think, are probably the most common commercial scale specialty crop, and especially in Labette County. I've been out to a couple of pumpkin farms that grow for G&W contracts specifically.
Oh, interesting. Now, what about anything on watermelons?
There is watermelons. They separate the melons into cantaloupe and muskmelon, honeydew, and then watermelon. I do not remember exactly what the watermelon data shows, but overall, in terms of specialty crop farms and specifically vegetables, it's weird because for some reason, well, I know exactly why, watermelons are considered vegetables from a production perspective, because they are annual, they're going to die off and you need to plant them again every year. Same with cantaloupes.
Of course,
yeah. Yeah, same with cantaloupes and honeydews. They're not returning crops, and so they're treated like annuals along with the rest of your
garden
vegetables.
Known to the United States government to be considered vegetables.
Yep. Well, no, from an extension and just a horticulture perspective, even when I was at K-State, we learned watermelons and other types of melons as vegetables.
Wow.
They were in the vegetable production.
We're not going to get into the tomato thing today.
Oh, no. No. I could fill up an entire extra half hour about tomatoes and the botanical versus the culinary definition. But watermelons are included. I honestly have not seen, outside of I think one specific visit, anyone growing watermelons.
Okay. I mean, I know a lot of water they require, obviously.
They do require a lot of water, but they are native to Africa, and so they would probably do pretty well in our heat compared to other types of melons that we would try to grow.
Yeah.
So I do think it's worth experimenting with watermelons. I just can't say for sure how productive they would be.
Yeah, learn something every day. So, Jesse, if people have questions for you, maybe they're looking at a specialty crop and they want your advice, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can either call the Girard office, my number is 620-724-8233, or they can email me at jr637@ksu.edu.
Excellent. All right. Well, Jesse, appreciate it. And Francis Graves will be coming up next. Francis, what do you have on the agenda for our next segment?
So I'm going to talk a little bit about my specialty area, which is community vitality, and we've got several great events coming up.
Excellent. We're looking forward to that. So we'll have that coming up right after the news here on the Mighty 690. Weather-wise, we're looking for decreasing clouds today. We're going to have a high in the mid to upper 60s. Mostly cloudy tonight. A chance of some overnight thunderstorms, especially in the early morning hours. And we'll have shower chances continuing all the way through the end of the work week. We are looking at 44 right now at KGGF. Back here on the Mighty 690 at 810, our Green Setup program continues, brought to you by the folks at Green Acres in Coffeyville. And we are joined now by Wildcat District Director Francis Graves, who's also Community Vitality Extension Agent. Good morning, Francis. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Hey, it's good to have you on, and excited to be able to talk to you here a little bit. And, you know, since you're not necessarily a regular here on our program as of yet, we'd like you to be, but can you tell us just a little bit about, you know, what your role is within the Wildcat District, what kind of things you do, and how you help people?
Sure. So, you know, most people know Extension for Ag and Natural Resources or 4-H Youth Development or even the Family and Community kind of health and food safety type programs, but we also have a community vitality realm, which is a fancy word for community development. And you can learn more about some of our statewide programs and offerings if you go to our website at KSRE for Kansas State Research and Extension. KSU.edu, and you click on Explore Our Programs, there's a realm called Supporting Communities, and that talks about community betterment groups. It used to be called the Kansas Pride Program. Now it's called Kansas Community Empowerment. We have First Friday entrepreneurship calls to support small business. So we do things like that locally in our community, too. We've recently been hosting and helping host youth entrepreneurship competitions, which are really great, teaching kids about the starting a business. We have Remote Work Wednesdays, which is something that's coming up today. And then we do grant support. That's a big realm. So helping people learn how to write grants, reviewing their grants, kind of offering tips, and then also doing some research for some of those groups.
Oh, that is great. I mean, there's a lot that goes into, you know, growing a community, and our small business leaders, you know, really play a huge role in that. And I mean, people, you know, it's easy to forget too that, you know, even running the farm is a small business. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, and it sounds like there's plenty of things that you do is just going through some of those items. What have you seen, you know, obviously here in Southeast Kansas, we're, you know, working on some economic, you know, redevelopment and everything. Is there anything in particular you one area that you kind of help people with the most? Is it just like starting a business, maintaining a current business? What's kind of your day-to-day?
So, you know, I work with a lot of municipalities that are looking for some of those state and federal funds and even local community foundation type funds just to get a project started, like sidewalks or, you know, renovating a storefront or helping, you know, attract a developer to town. The biggest issues by far are housing and childcare, and then, of course, workforce development, a lot of our technical training programs. I've got a meeting later today with the school district that got a state community development block grant to build houses this summer. In one of our communities. So these kids will have a job, a summer job that's paid through this grant, and get to build a house in a kind of a disadvantaged community. So that kind of work is super important, just taking little steps along the way to try to just keep making progress.
That is great. Now, we see those themes time and time again. I think we really are honing in on those issues that you mentioned. The housing and childcare are definitely issues. And I know we've got a lot of folks in the community who are working on that, you know, on a city-by-city basis. So I think that is great. A lot of good stuff, of course, coming here in Montgomery County. Now, you're based out of the Altamont office, right?
Correct. Yep. So we cover four counties, but my home office is in Altamont, but I'm in every county at least a couple times a month.
Excellent. So are you a Kansas native, Francis, or where you hail from?
Yep. I grew up in Kansas. I've always lived here. I studied abroad a little bit in college, but definitely a big Kansas native. I actually went to KU.
Oh, okay.
And now I work for K-State.
Well, we won't hold that against
you. I've always loved all Kansas schools and all Kansas people.
No, that's good. And we didn't even get the chance to talk off air, but I mean, obviously both Jesse and I went to K-State, and we were in the amateur radio club at K-State and everything, so it's kind of fun to come full circle here and meet up again, which is neat. But my sister went to KU, so we like all of our Kansas universities. And
my entire family went to KU, so I was the first one to break rank.
Well, my dad went to WSU, so we got all, you know, some of the major ones. No Emporia State in our family or anything like that, but that is definitely neat. So, Francis, I know that you have a few events that are coming up you want to bring to our attention here.
Yep. So today we have Remote Work Wednesday, which is like a lunchtime Zoom call, and it's the first Wednesday of every month. And we actually have a partnership with Utah State Extension to do a remote online initiative, kind of a courseware where you can learn how to be a remote worker and have successful tips and tools under your belt. Today, the Utah State speaker is going to be talking about current trends with remote work and possible barriers to success. You mentioned farming as a small business. So we have a lot of farmers who have a side hustle. That's mm-hmm. And oftentimes, maybe their partner might be a remote worker, because we all live in rural areas, so that's how you make the ends meet.
And that has really worked out. I mean, we've got several, you know, people here at the office where maybe they work here and then their spouse works from home, and that can really be a good opportunity there. Or even, you know, on the farm, maybe you have a husband and wife, and the wife takes care of maybe the bookkeeping for the farm, but maybe she has some extra time to grab another one of these remote jobs. So finding those can sometimes be a challenge. I know, you know, who do I talk to? Where do I even start?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're used to just, you know, looking for maybe local jobs around. So I think that's going to be a big opportunity. And as we get, you know, better internet access out here, I know that people have talked before about having that as really a way to attract people to the rural lifestyle. People are interested in that, but can still have a high paying remote job.
Yep, absolutely. And sometimes that's how you get your benefits, is through that remote work. So you can do your local work. That's more of the farm hustle. But we are slowly getting good internet. It's community by community, baby steps.
Yeah,
but it takes
a while.
Coming. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know a lot of towns even, you know, working on some of that fiber and everything. So
yep.
It'll get here eventually. But I mean, I think even was part of that Census of Agriculture, Jesse, surveyed the number of farms that have internet.
Yes, that was one of the primary things they focused on in 2017. And I do believe they asked that again in 2022, is the percentage of farmers that have access to broadband internet. Because it was really interesting. Sorry, I'm kind of usurping your talk a little bit. I took a community and regional economic analysis class, and they really, part of that is community development, and they really emphasized access to internet as kind of the great equalizer between rural communities and urban communities in order to do things like workforce training, remote work, like you mentioned. Access to information just in general is very important for rural communities to not lag behind urban in terms of, you know, maintaining a well-trained population of people who can do the work needed to sustain these rural communities. So I just found that interesting. And yes, that is a very good point. Thank you for bringing up that that was included on the census of agriculture.
Well, and I think it was, you know, there had been an increase, obviously, which is good to see. It's still in the, I think, low to mid 80s, if I remember right, something like that, as far as percentage of access there. But yeah, I mean, that's something that oftentimes in rural areas, we just think it's normal to not be able to load a YouTube video. But, you know, some people from a city would be shocked at that. But, you know, like you said, I think we're slowly getting there, Francis.
Yeah, Kansas Farm Bureau has actually done some really good work in surveying, training. But it's hard because they need people like us and all of our, you know, communities to log in and ping our internet speed and then distribute that data so that they can then go to Congress and lobby for greater support for rural fiber extensions.
Sure. Yep. Very good. So what else, any other events that you'd like to highlight here for us?
Yeah, so we've got lots of stuff coming up. This Thursday is, so tomorrow is Animal Health Day in Independence. And if you're interested in that, you can call 620-331-2690, our Independence Wildcat District office. And that's going to be talking about herd health and cattle handling. We also have a homesteading workshop series, which Jesse is teaching the first class. And that's also this Thursday. It kicks off with fruit pest tree management. But we have classes coming up on livestock operations, small scale, backyard mushrooms, fruit tree care, backyard chickens, old school soap making, get your goats, pressure canning basics, fantastic fermentations, and good grazing techniques. Those are each their own class. So check out our website at wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu for all those details.
I love that. I mean, I think the homesteading thing is really cool, and it seems like people are really getting into that. It's one of those trendy things now. But a lot of people say, well, we've always been doing this, but you know, yeah. A lot of people getting kind of into that, a little bit of a maybe back to the earth movement. But I think it's great. The more people can get connected and get outside and actually make their own stuff. I think that is definitely cool. You're laughing over there.
Yeah, literally as soon as we started planning this, we found three other extension universities giving a homesteading series. I think Utah, Arkansas, and one other one. We're all doing homesteading series at the same time.
Hey, so, it means you're on the right track.
It's very, very in the public consciousness for extension programs.
Well, I think some of that came from, you know, with COVID and everything, people realized that our supply chain is a lot more fragile than they realized how fragile it is. And you know, remember, I was just thinking about, you know, like we couldn't find yeast because everyone started making bread. Everyone started buying wood and, you know, doing add-ons and random building projects. So, you know, people were, you know, realizing that, hey, you know, maybe it would be good to know how to have some of these skills.
It was fascinating. COVID was horrible for a lot of reasons, but for the horticulture industry, it was amazing because everyone got back into gardening because they needed to get out of the house but couldn't really go anywhere, so they went into their backyards and they started planting plants and growing their own fruits and vegetables, and you saw a massive, massive spike in the revenues of horticulture-related businesses in 2020, which you can't really say across the board for pretty much any other industry, but I think a lot of people are interested in maintaining or learning new skills in that kind of same area.
Even if it's just growing a few tomato plants. I mean, you can buy a tomato at the store now for a buck or more, or you can buy a tomato plant, pop it in the ground there, and grow tomatoes all summer. So
yeah, there are reasons why you would not want to buy a tomato and grow the seeds.
Yeah,
from that.
No, don't do that.
Well, it's not that it would be bad. It's just that you probably wouldn't have much success.
Yeah. No, I know you could talk for half an hour on that too, but no, that's really good. So that's a good update there, Francis. Any other events you want to tell us about?
Yeah, we have a big event coming up next Saturday called the Makers Fair and Open House. So we have a Southeast Research Center in Parsons, and it is Saturday, March 16th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's the same day as their St. Patrick's Day parade, which starts at 1. So it's a nice little event to come out. And if you want to test any of those homesteading ideas, we're going to be doing some short programs on mushroom growing. Jesse, are you doing a tree?
I'm doing tomato grafting.
Tomato grafting, yeah. We'll have some cooking classes, bread making, and then a 4-H project showcases, which is always fun. And then some crafts people who are actually going to be making their things and selling them there.
Excellent. Well, that's great. That's going to be a good one on that. So any other events to let us know about?
Just that youth tractor safety. That's okay. A big one. Yeah. Once a year, people always call when it's over, and they want to know when they can get their kids signed up. So we try really hard to let everyone know. Spring break.
Remind us what ages is this for?
14 and 15 years of age.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then so this is a you know, that whole now at the end of the program, you get like the tractor safety. The tractor permit, isn't there a permit?
Yeah, you get a permit, and this is a big partnership with our utility companies, because that's a huge safety hazard, is driving these tractors and accidentally, you know, hitting a line. If a kid's on their own, it can be deadly. So it's really important to have them trained if they're going to be doing, you know, regular farm work.
Yeah, and then the deadline, if folks are interested in registering for tractor safety?
They'd like people registered by tomorrow, but, you know, just call the number 720-784-5337, and she'll get you on the list.
Okay. Well, that's going to be a great opportunity coming up. So if you got a kid on the farm turning 14 or 15, that would be great. And even, you know, you don't have to live on a farm to take advantage of tractor safety. It's open to anyone.
Yep, absolutely. Sometimes people just take our programs because they, you know, even we consider ourselves a rural area, but there's a lot of people that don't even know the difference between dairy cattle and stocker cattle and that sort of thing. So they might just take a class just to learn about the, you know, the agriculture culture.
Yeah. And keep those kids busy during spring break.
So. Yeah, yep, indeed.
Some good stuff. Well, Francis, anything else you'd like to share with us while you have our listeners here? And maybe the best way to get a hold of you if they do have questions for you.
Yep, so my email address is Francis, F-R-A-N-C-E-S, Graves, G-R-A-V-E-S, at ksu.edu. Or they can check out our website. That's where all of these events that we talked about are listed, wildcatdistrict.ksu.edu. And our Altamont office number is 620-784-5337. We're getting ready to, you know, gear up. 4-H season is hitting. If you are a new family that hasn't signed up for 4-H, you still can. You can just call any of our offices and get your kids signed up. There's lots of camps going on this summer locally and in Manhattan and the state level. And then all the fun stuff of fair.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait for the fairs. It's always my favorite part of the year. So, yeah. All right, Francis, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Jesse. And look forward to chatting again soon.
Thank you. Sounds good.
All right, that is our Green Side Up program here on the Mighty 690, and we have open line coming up here in moments. We are looking at a high in the mid to upper 60s today. We have 45 degrees right now at KGGF.